Genesis chapter 10. We've been working our way through the book of Genesis, and this is message number 11 in the series, and the title of this message is simply 70 Nations, 70 Nations. So we'll be looking at all of chapter 10. We're going to read verse number 1 to get started. Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and unto them were born sons after the flood. So after the flood, the water receded, the ark rested, and Noah's family repopulated the earth. And chapter 9 records the first biblical covenant that God made, which was God's covenant with Noah. And this covenant, we learn in chapter 9, was perpetual and it was unconditional. Not only was this covenant made with Noah, but with all mankind, having to do with the earth and life on the earth. The covenant is given in light of man's sinfulness. In other words, that is accounted for in that covenant. And so the covenant is also based on God's grace. The covenant is God's promise to stabilize the earth, the cycles and systems of the earth, and to never again send a global flood to destroy all life on earth. The covenant also accounts for the enmity between men and animals. The animals are given for food with some restriction. And the covenant also prepares for civil governments with the provision for capital punishment, with the protection of human life as mankind is made in the image of God. Now, chapter 9 brings Noah's story to an end and prepares us for the next two chapters to focus on the descendants of his sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. So as we come here to chapter number 10, we get another genealogy table. And this table, though, does differ from some of the others. And it's not exactly a genealogy, but it is sometimes referred to as the Table of Nations, and that is a pretty good way to refer to it. Because the purpose of this table in Genesis 10 is to record the origin of the nations with their ethnic and their geographic links. Now, tables like this don't usually make for a lot of interesting reading. They're filled with a bunch of names that are hard to pronounce. But this table serves important purposes, not only in the story of Genesis, but even in the entire Bible. The genealogies trace the seed line from the fulfillment of that promise, the Genesis 3:15, the seed of the woman. And so we trace from Adam to Noah, and then from Noah to Abraham. Also, Genesis tells of the origin of everything, but more particularly, it is the account of the origin of Israel. And so it's important that this chapter gives the origin of the nations, and Israel is not in this list. And they were a nation that was made from Abraham later, a nation that did not exist before. Well, the nations are actually one of the major story threads of the Bible, and we looked at that in a recent systematic study that we did. But here we get the origin of the nations, we get the divisions of the nations by family, by language, and by land. And when seen in this light, you realize that Genesis 10 is important to the rest of the Bible. So chapters like this are hard. They're hard to read. They're hard to preach. They give us a lot of information. There's not really practical instruction that's given to us here. This may not necessarily be one of your favorite chapters in the Bible or such, but hopefully it won't be all that bad. This is an important chapter in the Bible story, and if we're going to read and understand, know the Bible, then we're going to have to read and understand chapters such as Genesis chapter number 10. So if we want to break this chapter down, we can do so into three parts. This chapter traces the sons of Noah and their descendants, so that forms sort of the outline for the chapter. You have the nations of Japheth in verses 1 to 5. You have the nations of Ham in verses 6 to 20. And in verses 21 to 32, you have the nations of Shem. And so that is how the table is organized. So we're going to start with verses 1 to 5 that give us the nations of Japheth. Let's read verse 1 again. Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were born sons after the flood. So obviously we notice right away, these are the generations. This is a familiar phrase that we have seen. It occurs especially throughout in the book of Genesis. And it also designates a new section. So it shows us that this section on Noah is finished. The ark and the flood, probably the major events with Noah and then the covenant. And then his section is finished at this point. And so this also is speaking to us of the account that was foreshadowed back in chapter number 9, in verse number 19, verses 1 and 7 as well, when God charges Noah and his sons to fill the earth, to be fruitful, to multiply, and to fill the earth. Now you also notice at verse 1 that it notes that this is after the flood, which means that this is the new order for the earth. We have the seasonal stability that we got at the end of chapter 8 and into chapter number 9, the seed time, the harvest, the cold, the heat, the sun, the rain, the seasons, all those kind of things. So we get the stability of the earth and the earth systems in that chapter. And we also get here in this chapter the geographic territories of the nations. So in a sense, we look at chapter 9 and we see a lot about the earth itself in particular and how that it's ordered after the flood. And then in chapter 10, we begin to look at the inhabitants of the earth and how they are ordered or divided after the flood. So again, it completes that picture of this new order after the flood. The flood was obviously a major upheaval in the earth, in the earth systems, and in everything that was known, with all life on the earth being wiped out. So look at verse 2 to 4. The sons of Japheth, Gomer and Magog and Madai and Javan and Tubal and Meshech and Tiras, and the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz and Riphath and Togarma, and the sons of Javan, Elisha and Tarshish, Kittim and Dunanim. And I'm going to try to not read those too many times because I probably won't pronounce a lot of them the same way twice. So when you look at verses 2 to 4, we're getting these descendants of Japheth. And what we get when we look at this is we get 14 different nations that have come from Japheth. And that's a pattern that's going to continue in these accounts throughout this chapter. And so these nations that are spoken of, when we connect them as best we can with the rest of the Bible and with history, these are nations that went north and east and west from Mount Ararat there in modern-day Turkey. So these are the roots of what are referred to as the Indo-European nations. So we have the name of Tarshish, which is associated with Spain. That's going far west. We have Magog and Tubal and Meshech and so on. And these are associated with Asia Minor. And then we have the east to the regions of the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, Gomer, associated with the Sumerians, Ashkenaz with the Scythians and the Medes and the Paphlagonians, and so on. So what we see here are the roots of peoples and places that would include Spain, to Wales, to Germany, to Russia, to Georgia, to Greece, to Armenia, Cyprus, Macedonia. So all of these European nations, even into Asia Minor, all of these European nations we see primarily coming from Japheth. And then look at verse 5. It says, by these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations. So here we get reference to this dividing of the nations. And we're going to see that repeated in chapter 10. We'll see it again in chapter number 11. Now the word for Gentiles that is used here in verse number 5 is the word goy or goyim. And really that word is a general word for nations. Now, it's usually not what we think of if we hear the term goy or goyim, because generally it does mean Gentiles. It means non Jewish nations. And over time, that came to be the association with the word, even indicating more than likely unbelievers. But this word, much of the time in the Bible, is used to refer to non-Jewish nations, but not always. There's even sometimes that Israel is referred to as goy or goyim. And again, just in the most basic definition of this word, it just simply means nations, a people group. So that's the word that is used. And then it is translated nations at the end of the verse. So the isles of the Gentiles, and that's goyim, and then in the end, in their nations, and that's goyim also. And so it's translated Gentiles, and it's translated nations. And again, you have to look at the context here. Obviously, it's a general term for nations, and it certainly would be non-Jewish nations because there was no Jewish nation at this point. Now, the word for isles that is used in verse 5 is a word that can literally mean islands. It certainly can. But it can also mean coasts, and it can also just simply mean countries. And so if we were talking about, the country of the United States, we would be talking about sort of that land, that geographic boundary that defines that country. And so it is a term that does refer in some ways to the land that is the possession of a particular nation. So we could think of this word as encompassing those land borders. Now the word for tongue in verse number 5 literally means tongue, but it is used obviously figuratively to mean languages. Now this obviously anticipates the next chapter because at this point, all of these peoples were speaking of one language, and we don't get the division of languages until you get to chapter number 11. So obviously this is anticipating the Tower of Babel event. Now, so what is interesting to note here, verse 5, which is, again, it's formulaic, there's a pattern, it gets repeated with each of these. Nations here are defined as involving tribal connections. You see this reference to families. So that would be tribal connections, it would be ethnic connections. So nations are defined as involving tribal connections. Nations are defined as involving language connections. So that would be another part of what you might refer to as national identity, according to the Bible. And nations are also defined by their land boundaries. So these make up the identities of nations. They have a particular tribe or family, a particular ethnic group. They have a particular language, and they have a particular land boundary. So that is the way that nations are defined in the Bible, and you'll see this again repeated throughout. Now, one of the things we don't want to miss is that land is very important in the book of Genesis, and it's important in the rest of the Bible, and that land is unbreakably associated with nations, and of course, Israel in the past, present, and future. We might talk a little bit more about that at the end. So the next section, which is a larger section, verses 6 to 20, and these would be the nations of Ham. So we'll start here with the first 14 verses. And the sons of Ham, Cush and Mizraim and Phut and Canaan, the sons of Cush, Seba and Havilah and Sabta and Raama, Sabteca, and the sons of Raama, Sheba and Dedan. And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calne in the land of Shinar. And out of that land went forth Ashur and builded Nineveh and the city of Rehoboth and Calah and Resen between Nineveh and Calah, the same as a great city. And Mizraim begat Ludim and Anamim and Lahabim and Naphtahim and Pathrusim and Kasluhim, out of whom came Philistim and Kaphtarim. So we read here about particularly the three sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, and Phut. And then another section is given to his son Canaan. So the land of Shinar that is referred to in this part refers to what we know of or would know of as Sumeria. And what we see in these nations that have come from Ham, we see various nations associated. Ethiopia, would be associated with Cush, Egypt, with Mizraim, the Philistines, and Crete, and Pathrasim, and Pathros, and Libya, and even to Somalia. Some of these different nations are associated here. Now, the account of Nimrod is given special treatment. Nimrod, it features in the next chapter in the Tower of Babel. He's referred to as a mighty one, which a word most likely indicating that he was something of a warrior. It's a word that was used back in chapter 6 and verse number 4 when the earth was filled with violence because everyone was striving for conquest and everyone was striving for dominance. So Nimrod was a mighty one. He was a warrior. In other words, he built cities and he built kingdoms. And this is emphasized with Nimrod, not that it didn't happen with the other nations, but it seems to suggest to us that Nimrod was set on conquest. In other words, that the motivation of Nimrod was to consolidate power. He wanted to conquer and to rule and to bring all the nations together under one, and of course him being on the top. And then we get the story of Canaan here, verses 15 to 19. And Canaan begat Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvidite, and the Zemarite, and the Hamathite, and afterward were the families of Canaanites spread abroad. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gerar unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Lasha. So in these mentions of Canaan, and obviously, yes, that's where we get the land of Canaan. When we talk about Canaan and we talk about Canaanites throughout the Bible, this is where it comes from. So there are a number of different nations that are associated with Canaan, with the descendants of Ham, the Phoenicians, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Arkites, the Sinites, which actually has been shown that there's a quite possible connection there actually with China. Arvidites, Zimmerites, Hamathites. And we also, you notice, that we get this description in verse number 19. We have a description of the land of Canaan. We get the border of the Canaanites from Sidon that would be on the west coast, as thou comest to Gerar and Gaza and goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah, and so on, going from east to west, and encompassing the land roughly, which is the same land that later is going to be promised to Abraham and to his descendants, Isaac and Jacob, and the nation of Israel. So this land of Canaan is first described, it's first given its boundaries here, given the shape of it. And these certain nations obviously were there in the origin of the nations. These certain nations, though, will go on to be dispossessed from this land and this particular land given again to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for an everlasting inheritance to the nation of Israel. So obviously as we read this account, we see a foreshadowing, a looking forward to what is to come later, and also giving us some explanation of what does happen later and how that land comes to be promised to the nation of Israel. Verse number 20, these are the sons of Ham after their families, after their tongues, in their countries, and in their nations. So when you go through and you add it up, you now have 30 nations that are attributed to Ham or descendants of Ham. And again, we see this designation of nations by tribe, or family, ethnicity, by tongues, languages, and by countries or lands. And we also would add by nations, which would be an indication of their governments. Again, these are what makes up national identity of nations according to the Bible. Well, then the rest of the chapter is given to Shem and to his descendants. So we look at verses 21 to 30. Unto Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth the elder, even to him were children born. The children of Shem, Elam, and Ashur, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram, and the children of Aram, Uz, and Hul, and Gether, and Mash. And Arphaxad begat Salah, and Salah begat Eber, and unto Eber were born two sons. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. And Joktan begat Almadad, and Shaleph and Hazarmaveth and Yerah and Hadaram and Uzal and Dikla and Obal and Abimael and Sheba and Ophir and Havilah and Yobab. All these were the sons of Yoktan. So here we get the roots of many of the, these are the Semitic peoples, many of the Arab peoples. So here we get roots of the nations of Assyria and Syria and the Aramaeans and the many Arab nations of the Arabian Peninsula. Of course, you notice the name Eber that is used there, verses 24 and 25. That's one of the ancestors of Abraham. And Eber is the source of the name Hebrew, and it is applied to those descended from Abraham. And this line descended known as the Hebrews. Now, verses 31 and 32, verse 31 first says, "These are the sons of Shem, after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, after their nations." So when you add up these nations of Shem, you come to 26 nations of Shem. We get this repetitive statement, the families, the tongues, the lands, and the nation. Again, these national identities made up of tribal connections, language connections, land boundaries. And then we get sort of a summation in verse 32 that sort of brings this back around to verse 31. "These are the families of the sons of Noah, after their generations, in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood." Now, the word for divided has the idea of spread or of dispersed. Now, some people have looked up earlier to say verse 25, "Unto Eber were born two sons, the name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Yoktan." So, in the days of Peleg, we're told that the earth was divided. And some have assumed that this would have to do with the separation of continental land masses. In other words, literally the dividing of the dry land. But actually, as you look through and you read through these chapters in this overall context, and you see this reference to the earth being divided, it is much more speaking to the fact that the countries were divided over the earth. In other words, they were dispersed. So this is a reference to the territories that were inhabited by the nations from Noah and his sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. They were divided, they were dispersed, they were scattered. When you look at the roots of the word, it has the idea of being put into pieces and distributed. And that is what happened with the nations. They were spread over the earth, and this was according to the plan of God. All right, so now when we look at a chapter like Genesis chapter 10, and again, there's when we look at these, there's a lot of names that we know nothing about. We really can't historically connect. We don't know for sure where they go. Some we could be pretty certain of, some much less certain, some we really just don't have much idea. But when you look at chapter 10, and you go through and you add up the names, you get 70 nations. So there were 14 attributed to Japheth, there were 30 that were attributed to Ham, and there were 26 attributed to Shem. And again, you add those up to 70 nations. Now, Moses also later refers back to this time when he's writing in the book of Deuteronomy. Now remember, in Deuteronomy, Moses is coming to the end of the books of the law, the end of the Pentateuch, these Genesis to Deuteronomy. And all of these words are going to be given to the second generation of Israel on the plains of Moab that are getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. And here's what Moses says when he refers back to this time. So this is Deuteronomy chapter 32, verses 7 and 8. "Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee. Thy elders, and they will tell thee. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam He set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. So on the one hand, as Moses is preparing this second generation of Israel to enter into the promised land, he's telling them that they are to remember these histories. They are to consider these histories. They are to teach them to their children. They are to understand where they came from, why that they are going into this land, and why that they are supposed to possess it. Now, he speaks of the time, he says, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance. Now, we don't get the language of inheritance here in Genesis chapter number 10, but we do get it later, even in the books of Moses and then throughout the Old Testament. We get some echoes of it in the New Testament as well. So when it comes to inheritance, typically, at least a part of that inheritance that is referred to is the land. It is the earth itself. And the earth itself was apportioned. It was allotted to these various nations. And this is when Moses is referring to when God divided this, when he made this note. It says he set bounds of the people. And then he says that he did this according to the number of the children of Israel. Now, Moses doesn't, at that point in Deuteronomy, he doesn't give any further explanation. He just simply says the number of the children of Israel. So what number is he referring to? Well, we know that there were 12 tribes of Israel because there were 12 sons of Jacob, but that doesn't really seem to correspond to anything. Well, I believe it's cleared up when you go back to Egypt and you go back to the end of Genesis chapter 46 and verse 27, where Moses writes, "And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were two souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70, or 70. So there were 70. The nation of Israel was 70 people strong when it entered into or was in Egypt. And there are 70 nations that are spoken of here in Genesis chapter 10 that have been spread. They've been dispersed over the earth, which Moses described in Deuteronomy 32 as God setting the boundaries. In other words, he has given certain land to certain nations. Paul also refers to this in the New Testament and when he was there in Athens. So in Acts chapter 17, verses 24 to 28, "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring." So the nations have been given an inheritance in the earth. They've been given an inheritance, in fact, before Israel was given an inheritance in the earth. The nations have been given an inheritance of the earth. And that inheritance will be possessed by the faithful of those nations. So just look at what Paul was saying there in Acts chapter 17 and verse 27, that they should seek the Lord. In other words, God's purpose for the nations, God's purpose for giving them a possession in the earth, an inheritance in the earth, was that they should seek the Lord, which of course they failed to do. So they've been given an inheritance in the earth that will be possessed by those nations one day. We see the nations possessing their land in that millennial kingdom of Christ that is to come. We see the nations once again, even in the eternal ages. So that is their inheritance, and it will be possessed in the future, just as Israel will possess the inheritance that has been promised to them. Now, some of these nations are lost to us. Some of these are still with us. Ethiopia, Egypt. We can still trace some of these even to people groups today and places today. Many of them are lost to us. whether they've just sort of been lost in history or we just simply don't even know what all the connections are. So we cannot be certain of identifying every nation in this table of 70 nations. And we also don't know how all this is going to look. In other words, when God has appointed this inheritance, and then he commands all men to repentance, and he will, those that believe will receive their inheritance. So in this future time, nations are going to occupy the earth that was given to them. But we don't know what it's going to look like in Christ's coming kingdom. We don't know exactly how that's going to be divided up. And we also know, if you've ever, you know, done genealogy work in your own family or anything like that, you know that there there gets to be different nationalities that are mixed together and all of us are like that. And so how all of that works out, I don't know. And I certainly can't tell you. So I don't know what all it's going to look like. But we do know that a big part of that millennial kingdom speaks of the nations of the earth and them bringing their tribute into Jerusalem to King Jesus, who is there on the throne of David in that time. And again, we come all the way back to right here where we see the origin of these nations and also the designation of this inheritance that they are to receive, at least those who believe. So when we look at a chapter like this, you might say, well, there's a lot of questions, maybe even more questions than answers that we could have about some of these things. And it might be true. But what's the purpose or what's the point of a chapter like this? Well, the existence of this chapter also gives us the assurance that this is part of God's plan and God's purpose for the creation. And again, we studied these things in more detail in that systematic study when we were looking at eschatology. But when you come to a chapter like this, and all these names are hard to pronounce, and again, some of them we have no idea about. We don't know anything other than just the bare mention of them here. So there's a lot of things that we don't know. But we do know that God has recorded this, that God had inspired Moses to keep record of this. We know that Moses refers back to this in Deuteronomy when he's talking to Israel, and he's saying, remember, you need to remember this. You need to consider this. You need to keep this in your mind. And if you don't know, then you go to the elders for them to tell you of it. In other words, this is to be preserved. It is important. So it is a part of God's plan. It is a part of God's purpose. Just because we don't know how all of the details will work out, we don't know exactly how everything is going to look when this is fulfilled, but nevertheless, we know that this is a part of God's plan. And that means also then, we know that God will perform it just as he has spoken it. He will perform it just as he has promised. How those nations are all divided up and how all of that works out, I can't say. But this is God's purpose and plan, and he will fulfill it just as he has promised to do.